So we have one final storyteller up this evening, and she gave me a lot of great things to say about her. I'm going to preface all of them by saying she is an awesome lady. I'm thrilled that I know her. But some of the things that she likes doing: going fishing with her brother, doing yoga, dancing. She really loves her friends. She really loves her partner. I am very, very glad she's with us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mary Dispenza.
I grew up in East Los Angeles, and there I began over half a century in the Catholic Church. I went to elementary Catholic school, elementary high school, Catholic high school, and I was taught by the Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Mary. And a friend asked me, "What was it that you liked about the Sisters?" And I said, "They loved me, and I knew it." And that has made a great difference in my life. And after high school, I entered the convent of the Sacred Heart of Mary. And there I spent 15 years. I taught the first grade, the second grade, the sixth grade, the eighth grade, and then I became principal. It was a great time for me. However, into about the eighth year, I became restless and not so peaceful, and something that once fit didn't fit anymore. And so I spent those last 7 years praying, discerning, seeking advice and counsel, and finally I knew that I needed to leave my religious community. And so at age 33, I left my religious community and I went into the world, so to speak, the world that I knew very little about. I can tell you that as a young girl, I was very much at home and comfortable with girls. And I can also tell you that I fell in love with a nun. However, I knew very little about sexuality and sex. It was something we just never talked about in the convent. So I had to put all those feelings in a box and leave them there when I went out into the world. And I remembered one teaching that I had learned in high school and in the convent. It was that there were three states, and I don't mean California and Washington. I mean the three states as described by the Catholic Church. First, the religious state, then the married state, and then the celibate state. I knew I had lived the religious state, and I did a pretty good job at the celibate state. So I decided there was only one choice left for me, and that was to be heterosexual and work towards marriage. So I set out to be heterosexual, and I put all the feelings about women in a box and detached from those. And so my friends were doing matchmaker.com and also the Seattle Weekly ads. And so I thought, maybe that's a good idea. They had found some partners and dates and all. And so I started reading the Seattle Weekly for the first time. And I went to the want ads. And I noticed all these ads started with SWW. And I didn't know what that meant. So I read it again, SWW. Oh, single white woman. And then it was always followed by Sikhs. Single white woman Sikhs. Handsome, loving, wonderful, warm, friendly. Likes to sit by the fire, drink champagne, and on, man. So I wrote my great ad and put it in the Seattle Weekly, and sure enough, I had a lot of responses, and I selected five. And I'll tell you about one of the dates. The car drove up into the driveway, and I was peering out the window, and I noticed it was a gray primed Chevrolet. And this is shades of East Los Angeles for me. And that is not a good thing. And then I got into the car, and my window wouldn't roll all the way up. And it was winter. And that was not a very good sign. And then we drove to Denny's. And there's nothing wrong with Denny's. However, on a first date, it wasn't quite what I had in mind. And then he decided that we would share one meal. And so he ordered, I think it was something like meatloaf or something like that. And so, you know, it just didn't work. And that ended my career, the dating game. I just could not pursue that much longer. And also, at that time, men didn't work, and women worked, but they didn't because of anxiety and shame. And so I just put all of sexuality, the journey around that, in a box again, and shifted to putting my energy into my work. And I was again principal of a Catholic school. And it's very interesting to me that I could be so confused on one level and so not in peace and calm, and yet on another level be so successful. I was awarded National Distinguished Principal, and that coupled with all the years in education caused me to think that maybe it was just time to make a change. And so at that time there was a position that opened up in the Catholic Archdiocese of Seattle, and it was for director of the Pastoral Life Services Department. So I thought I would apply for that job. And I did, and I was selected by the committee, who in turn put my name forward to the archbishops because it was an appointed position. And so I was appointed to that position, and I remember a question from that interview. I was asked, "Do you promise that you will never do anything to shame or embarrass the archbishops?" And at that time I said, yes, I promise, of course, because I would never want to do something to shame a church that I loved so very much. And at that same time as that I took that position, I knew I needed to begin therapy. And at the first session with my therapist, I said to her, I just don't want to talk about women. And she got a grin, just like you did. And I said, I'm not going to talk about women. So time went on, I'm ashamed to say, 2 years before, she said, unless you address the issue of sexuality in your life, you will never know intimacy. So I went home and took that week thinking about intimacy and love. And I longed for intimacy. And the thought of never having intimacy or love in my life was something I just couldn't bear. So I went back the next week and I said to my therapist, yes. And she knew what I meant. And she put her head down because she knew the challenges that would bring me in my position in the Catholic Church. I wanted to say, yes, I'm lesbian and I love women, but I just couldn't even say the words at that time. So I went home, and the next week I continued to sit with the thought. I prayed. I just tried to integrate the reality of my life, and I realized that I needed some help. I needed some resources, so I thought, I'll get some books. So I went to the library, and it was at the time that the computers were just in use. If you wanted to research something or find out where the materials were, you could go to the computer. So I went to the computer, and I typed in the word lesbian, and I had this feeling that the whole library was, lights were going on, flashy. Flashy, lesbian, 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 lesbian. So I didn't get a book. I left. And I drove to the university bookstore. And I crept to the Gay Studies. It's a great name, isn't it? Gay Studies. So sophisticated. And I picked out three books. Lesbian Sex, of course. Amazing Grace, and Coming Out, an Act of Love. And I read the three books. They were wonderful books. And in the back of Coming Out, an Act of Love was a list of resources. And one mentioned was an upcoming workshop in Seattle. So I called and asked about the workshop, and sure enough, it was coming very soon. And it was called The Experience. And I knew I had to be there. You know how you know when you have to do something? That's how it was for me. So I went to that workshop, and it was absolutely magical. It was the first time ever in my entire life I had been in the room where there were others just like me. And there was a common oppression in that room because of the shame and the lack of ability to live from a place of truth and integrity. And at the same time, there was a feeling of hope also, because we were all there to finally come home to the truth of our lives. And I got a standing ovation at the end of that workshop, because I was able to stand up and say, I'm lesbian and I'm proud of who I am. And when I left that workshop, I was on fire. I wanted to tell the world about my life. Now, that's not a good thing to do when you work for the Archbishop. So I went back to my place of work, and I told my colleagues, and I tried to tell the Archbishop, but he wouldn't see me, and I'm not so sure why. So I told my immediate supervisor about coming out, and she said to me, that's nice, but you don't need to tell anybody. We have priests and sisters who are lesbian and gay, and they live in secrecy. And that was not good enough for me at that time. So I went back to my office, and very shortly thereafter, I read about a class at the University of Washington. It was on gay literature and gay studies. And I knew, again, I needed to be in that class. And the day I read about the class was the very day the class started. So I got myself to the class, and I found myself with about 10 others standing around the room, all of us hoping for the one empty space that was there. And after the class, the teacher walked around the room and asked all of us, why do you want to be in this class? And I said, I need to be in this class. I just came out, and I need to be in this class. And I was selected for the one place in that class. And it was a wonderful class. I'm so grateful to the students who were all younger than I was. And they took it upon themselves to share with me everything they knew about sex and sexuality. And I am forever grateful. And when I went back, and at the end of that class, Lily Eng from the Seattle Times came to the class, and she wanted to do an article on the class because it was novel and new. And she was waiting to interview the teacher who was involved with a student, and I was waiting to get my paper approved. So she asked me a couple of questions. And then I think, you know how writers, they smell a story? She smelled a story, and she said, do you mind if I do a story on you? And I said, no, of course not. And so we arranged for an interview, and where do you think we had it? We had it in my office in the Pastoral Life Services Department, which is right beneath the office of the Archbishop. That's not the appropriate place to have your interview on coming out. And I remember two questions from that interview. One was about the experiences I was having as a person that just came out. And I flashed to the Timberline. I don't know if you've ever been to the Timberline, but it was a marvelous bar with all kinds of dancing, line dancing, country western dancing. There were men dancing with men, women dancing with women, men dancing with women, women dancing with women. And I said to Lily, I think this is heaven. And that appeared in the article. And the next question she asked of me, she said, what does the church teach on homosexuality? And I said, the church teaches that you can be who you are, but you can't live that out. And I knew I could put a period, but for the first time, I claimed my own voice, not the voice of the church, not my church voice, but my own voice. And I said, I don't believe God would gift us with our different person, with our different sexualities, and not let us live those out in return. The greatest gift we can give the giver is to live out the gift. And those were the lines that did me under, so to speak. But I left my office and I said, free at last, free at last. And the weekend that followed was Memorial Weekend. And I went away for those 2 days. And when I came out, the Seattle Times was, an article was out, and I was out, way out. And looking back, it was a very good way to come out. I didn't have to tell people over and over again. And that day, I had two friends, and I do believe they were my friends. However, it was too much for them to hold. One came over and said, what are you doing? Have you lost your mind? And then she quoted scripture and said, you really are on your way to hell. And then I got a phone call from a friend who had invited me to a party and said, don't come. And then the losses, the necessary losses, started to unfold. My nephew in Washington sent the article to my family in Los Angeles, and they being fundamental Christians, they could not hold me in the reality of my life. And so I received a lengthy letter again filled with scripture and telling me that I am on the path to hell. And as a result, I have not seen my nieces, my nephews, my grandnieces, my nephews for 17 years or so. And we lost each other. And that's a shame. That's the real shame. And then, of course, I lost my church, that which held me, the container for my life. It provided an avenue for my gifts and for my talents. It provided celebration, ritual, prayer, community, all the things that I value today also. And my financial base was weakened because it took me a while to get back on my feet. I was depressed, and I couldn't get a job for a while. And all of those losses caused me to realize, especially when I was fired, they caused me to flash to a passage in scripture that says, you have to lose your life to find your life. And I never really knew what that meant until I was fired, until everything that I knew was gone, poof. And I think sometimes there's a great price to pay. We do have to lose our life to find our life. And I can't tell you, though, the joy that is now mine that came as a result of letting go and telling the truth about my life. I now know love, and I know intimacy. And I have a lifelong partner. And I have a new family of choice, and grandchildren and all the rest. And so I'm reminded of one of my favorite poems by David White. There are lines that say, I want to know if every day you can live with the consequences of love. And if I asked myself, would I do this over again? I would say, in a minute. And if I asked myself, would I do it the same way? I would say, yes. And was it worth it? Absolutely. And if there's going to be a last question that we're all going to be asked, and I think there will be one, it won't be who did you love or how did you love, but did you love?
That's like the fourth time I've heard that story. It makes me cry every time. Mary, thank you very much for telling that story. Thank you to all of our storytellers tonight for telling your wonderful stories. Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you to Rebecca.